Today we're going to step into the book of Ruth again, and we've been in it now for several weeks, and I love this little book. I really do. It's a great little book for us to explore together. Most of the time, you know, believers tend to spend a lot of their time in the New Testament because it feels like it's maybe more relatable, or for whatever reason, we know the words of Jesus are there, and we always love to track the life of Jesus and what he teaches us, and then what Paul teaches us, and so forth. All of that is good in the New Testament, but man, if you never open the Bible and crack it open to some of these wonderful books in the Old Testament, then you are missing out on a wonderful, wonderful truths to learn from. And this little book of Ruth, I'll tell you what, if it was not in the Bible, we would not be able to really be able to trace some things and understand how the Old Testament and the New Testament flow throughout Bible history. And I hope that in your journey as a believer, you are learning more and more about how the flow of the Bible works, because it truly is a love story. The Bible, don't ever let anybody tell you it's just a gathering of sacred writings written by human beings who just simply wanted to somehow figure out who God is. Don't ever allow the Bible to be lowered to that picture in your mind. Please understand, this is a love letter from God. It has been put together over 1,500 years by 40 different authors in different periods of time, but it is seamless in its presentation to us. And this little book of Ruth is absolutely critical to understanding kind of how things flow throughout the Old Testament. We're gonna understand that a little bit more as we go through this book and fully get to the end of it. Today we're going to look at Ruth chapter 3, and that's where our focus is going to be, and it really gets interesting in chapter 3. Things really kind of heat up in a couple of different ways, and it's going to be fun. But you know, this little book of Ruth really does teach us some things. And one of the things that it does teach us, one of the greatest lessons of this little book is that it reminds that every believer, every follower of Christ, the journey of the Christian is not a Interstate 5 from Eugene to Portland. It is not a straight line. That's not how the journey of the believer flows. The journey of the believer is more like from Monmouth Independence to Bend, Oregon. Okay? You get on that road and you begin to understand what the journey of the Christian is like, because it is full of twists and it's full of turns. It's full of fires. It's full of slick roads. It's full of avalanches. It's full of precipices. It's full of all kinds of things along the way, even maybe a bear or two along the journey. I mean, it has got all kinds of things going on. Now, along this journey, you're driving along, and all of a sudden you come to a corner, and you don't know what's around that corner. You don't know what's coming. I've driven that thing a number of times. Sometimes I'm not sure if there's a wreck around the corner. One time Sharon and I were coming back, and there was a motorcycle accident one time, and there are other things that happen along that journey. It's just, you never know. But along that journey, you, every now and then you'll get a milepost, and it'll tell you how much further to Bend, Oregon, what the distance is. And occasionally you'll have a vista point where you'll pull off your road and you'll look at this beautiful vista, and you'll see the gorgeous mountains that are there before you. And so that journey is an amazing journey to take, but it is the journey of the Christian. It's full of twists and it's full of turns. And that's what the book of Ruth reminds us. It's not a straight journey to glory. It's not a straight journey to eternity. It is full of obstacles. It's full of setbacks along the way. And the question is, how do we deal with those setbacks along the way? And the story of Ruth and Naomi and Boaz really gives us some help in that area. In chapter 1, we saw the setback to Naomi. Naomi was married to Elimelech, and they had two sons, and the husband Elimelech dies, the two sons die, but not after they had married two Moabite women, For 10 years, those Moabite women had been childless, which is a pretty important aspect of this story. And so now we have Naomi, and we have Ruth, and we have Orpah, who are three widows trying to figure out how are they going to maneuver through life. Some of you know what they feel like. Some of you in this room are widows, or you've experienced death in that way, and so you understand this. And so they're mourning, they're grieving. Ruth decides to stay with Naomi. She clings to Naomi. She sees in Naomi God, and she wants to be a part of the God that Naomi is all about. And so it's a beautiful picture. Orpah decides to go back and stay in her homeland, but Naomi and Ruth, they travel back to Israel, back to Bethlehem. But when they get there, we hear Naomi talk about her relationship with God. And she says, "I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. The Almighty has dealt bitterly with me." So we see a bitter Naomi coming out of a life of hardship. And you guys can identify with that. Some of you, maybe all of you. There have been times in your life, just like mine, where I've felt bitter. I've asked God questions a lot throughout my life. "God, why are we in this situation? Or why is this happening to us? Or God, what do we need to do here? Because I feel like sometimes things are crumbling. Life is not going like I thought it would." And most of you can identify with that. And here we have Naomi and Ruth in that situation. And then in chapter 2, we find that Naomi is filled with new hope, because Ruth decides that, they decide that Ruth needs to go out into the fields. They're not just going to sit at home and mope. They're not just going to have a little pity party at home feeling sorry for themselves. Naomi says, and Ruth says, and Ruth says to Naomi, "I need to get out into the fields. We've got to have food." And so up she got, and she went out, and she started walking down the road having no idea where to go. That's like some of us. Sometimes you just have to get up and you get moving. You don't sit, you don't just mope, you get moving. And God began to take her, and just it so happened that she ended up in a field where this man by the name of Boaz was the owner. And it just so happened he was a godly man. And so Naomi has new hope. Naomi sees a new opportunity that's exciting. Naomi hears of who Boaz is. She's reminded that he is their kinsman redeemer. But this man Boaz, even though he takes a look at Ruth and he sees her out in the field and he says, "Who is this Moabite woman?" He takes notice of her, and then all of chapter 2 is about how he meets her, he takes note of her, and all of a sudden he begins to protect her. He takes care of her. He knows who she is. He knows of their background, and he begins to all of a sudden show compassion on Ruth. And Ruth is certainly overwhelmed with this amazing, compassionate man, and she goes back to her mother, or to her mother-in-law Naomi, and she says, "Naomi, I met a man today. His name is Boaz." And all of a sudden, Naomi's eyes light up. Boaz! And all of a sudden, she remembers, Boaz is one of our kinsmen redeemers. He is a relative of ours. There's hope, after all. And isn't that like some of our journeys, some of our stories? We go through life and we hit bitter times, struggling times, we hit roadblocks, but then all of a sudden there's a glimmer of hope and something is happening, and we begin to feel the power of God moving in certain ways. And we see that here in chapter 2. And so we can identify with the storyline in some ways with what's going on here. So I want to pick it up in chapter 3, and let's begin with seeing where the rest of this goes. One day, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, to Ruth, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be well provided for? Is not Boaz, with those servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself. Put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know that you're there until he has finished eating and drinking. And when he lies down, note the place where he is lying, and then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do. I will do whatever you say, Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor, and she did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. Now, isn't this kind of interesting? This is really where it gets fun. Naomi and Ruth are going to make a risky move. Now, you know, as well as I do, in those days, normally marriages were planned. Marriages were prepared and planned by the parents of the man or the woman. And so here we find Naomi looking at their situation, and she takes it upon herself to look out for the good of Ruth. She knows Ruth needs security. Of course, Naomi does too, but she's thinking more about Ruth. And so she takes a risk, and she tells Ruth to pretty herself up, put on her nicest dress, put on her perfume, whatever else they had in that day to beautify themselves. Pretty yourself up, Ruth, and go down there and put yourself in an awkward position. And let's trust God. Just like Naomi, always putting others before herself. But I want to say to you, there's a secret behind that, because you see, if you're ever in a place of bitterness, if you're ever in a place of hardship, if you're ever facing a real setback in your life, you can mope, you can complain, but the greatest, one of the best ways you can move out of that spirit of bitterness is to start thinking about other people. Start thinking about others. Start doing good for others. Start participating in the welfare of other people. If you invest, start investing in the welfare of others, I can guarantee you, your troubles and your sorrows and some of those setbacks and periods of bitterness in your life are going to begin to evaporate, because the more you just give love, the more you begin to see some of that ice in your own heart and life begin to melt away. And so she decides she's going to take care of Ruth, and she sets up a plan. And it's been several weeks now since Naomi and Ruth walk into the town bitter and dejected. We know that because when they first come into town, the Bible says it was harvest time. But now it's threshing time. And I just want to give you a little picture, give you a little understanding about how this worked in that particular day and time. I want you to picture in your mind a hilltop out in the valley. I want you to picture in your mind a hilltop, and up on top of that hill is an area that's been leveled off. It's been leveled off. There may be a wall or two, but for the most part, it's out in the open. It's up on top of a hill, and usually it's formed into a circular area. And I want you to think about for a moment that you watch as these ladies take the stalks of grain, stalks of wheat, and they carry them up in bundles, and they take them up to the top of the hill, and they lay them all out in the middle of this cleared out flat area. It could have been hard stone, it could have been hard ground. And so they lay all of those bundles up there. And up on top of this hilltop is where the wind blows. It's very important that it's up where the wind blows, because what they understood was that when they take the wheat stalks up there, they lay them out on the floor, and then all of a sudden they take their oxen, and their oxen normally are pulled sleds or whatever, or occasionally they'll have a grinding stone, but the oxen will pull these sleds across the stalks of wheat. And as the oxen are pulling the sleds across the stalks of wheat in this flattened out area, the men would then take their pitchforks, and they would take them, or an instrument called a flail, they would take that ground up wheat, ground it up by those sleds, and they then take it and they would toss it up into the air. They'd just take the wheat, toss it up, and as that wind would blow, it would blow the chaff away, but the grain would fall to the floor. And this was called a threshing floor, okay? But don't think of it down low. Think of it up high on a flat area. And what would happen is when the winds began to blow, which were typically in the early evening, late afternoon, early evening, the winds would be blowing. What they would do is the men would get up there. The women have already laid out the stalks of grain. The cattle have already threshed it on the floor. They've already tossed it up into the air, and they've created a large, abundant pile of the grain. Then they would all stop, and they would have a celebration, and they would have a party. And there would be the people from the town would come up to the top area, and there would be partying, and there would be fellowshipping, and there would be rejoicing going on. And you can just imagine how exciting this would have been, because they've just come out of a famine. I mean, this is huge. And the party has begun, and the townspeople arrive. And notice that Ruth sees and is able to kind of watch where Boaz is going in all of this. Joy was in the air. Celebrating was occurring. During this time, they would sing songs. Some of the celebrations in the scripture are built around this threshing season, this time, the celebration of the grain harvest. And they would sing songs in the night. So you get a picture of the joy and the activity. And then when all the party was over and the fellowshipping and the celebration was over, the men would oftentimes get up on that threshing floor and they would lay down on their backs and they would face their heads towards the middle, and it would look like a wheel, and their feet would be pointed out. And the reason they would do that is so that they could protect the grain from any intruders, any enemies that may want to come. Anybody that would try to get to that grain, they would protect it. And so they would usually form a circle with their feet pointing out, ready to protect their harvest. And so imagine this particular night, celebrations gone well into the evening, the singing, but now it's all quiet. They found their sleeping stations, and there goes Boaz to his spot. And Ruth is watching, perhaps off in the shadows, we don't know, but she's watching where Boaz goes. Lo and behold, Boaz goes and he finds his spot. So let's begin reading from verse 5. It says, "I'll do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor, did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly. She uncovered his feet and she laid down. And in the middle of the night, something startled the man, and he turned and he discovered a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I'm your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You've not run after the young men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character." I'm loving this story. It's crazy. It's a crazy story. She waits. She's doing what Naomi has told her to do, but can you imagine in her heart, her heartbeat is just going 1,000 miles a second? She's asking herself, is this going to be awkward? Am I going to be shunned? What will he say? What will he do? You can imagine the thousands of things running through her head while Naomi is at home probably having a prayer meeting. Right? She's at home praying. "Oh God, I pray this goes well, because I've just sent my precious Ruth to do something that is outrageous, but very necessary." Now listen, if you think that this is some kind of a sexual thing, if you think there was some kind of sexual intent in this, then you've got the story all wrong. As a matter of fact, this practice of doing this was a fairly common practice, and some parts of the world today is still a common practice. But she was doing exactly what she had every right to do. Though she was putting it all on the line, she had, and she knew, under Naomi's instruction, she was just simply following the Mosaic law. She was going, and she was going to call for her kinsman redeemer to do exactly what her kinsman redeemer should be doing. Now, if you were here last week, I shared with you about the role of the kinsman redeemer. Let me just remind you again, the role of the kinsman redeemer, this was a nearest relative. If you, for example, if in that particular day, if I was married to Sharon and I passed away and Sharon was left a widow, then my brother, okay, and if we didn't have any children, if our children had died, I passed away, Sharon was still alive, my brother named Mike, it would be his role as the kinsman redeemer to come and to take care of Sharon. Not only take care of her, but to marry her. And then the potential of then having her child with my brother in order so that her lineage, her line, her property, what belongs to her, can continue to be in the family. You see, God set up a very serious plan to take care of the family and to take care of one another. Not only that, but the kinsman redeemer had land responsibilities. If Sharon and I, and living in that day, we had lost our property, if our home burned up, if our money was gone and we had nothing and we were destitute, we'd have the option of putting ourselves into slavery. But no, my brother Mike, my nearest relative, my kinsman redeemer, would look at our situation and he would come and he would help us and he would provide for us. Sometimes he would buy our land back for us and he would pay for it so that we could carry on our family and we could carry on and live our lives. You see, that's the role of the kinsman redeemer. A huge opportunity to invest himself. But not every kinsman redeemer wanted to redeem their kin. So what would Boaz do? Ruth, Naomi, they took the risk. Naomi said, Boaz is our kinsman redeemer. Ruth, we're going to put you in a situation. It may feel very awkward, but we believe we're going to trust God. I want you to go up there, lay down at his feet, cover yourself. Maybe she tickled his feet. Maybe she pulled the covers a little too far off of him. And in the middle of the night, he wakes up and goes, man, I'm awful cold. And he reached down. And as he's reaching down to pull the cover over him, lo and behold, there's a woman at his feet. And you can imagine in the middle of the night, if that were to happen to you, you'd say, whoa, what's going on here? And so, lo and behold, she recites the line she's been waiting to recite all night long, perhaps all day long. Ruth says, I'm your servant Ruth. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. You got to understand that line. That line simply says, you're my kinsman redeemer. Take me. Take me. Take my future. Take me. Take me under your care. To her, she understands it. I want you to be my husband. It was a proposition. When I was reading this, it made me think back to when I came and talked to Sharon's father. I came to Sharon's father at night when he was laying down in bed. I did. I waited till he went into his bedroom and was laying in his bed in the darkness of his bedroom. And I sat on the bed and I asked him, would you allow Sharon to be my wife? I was shaken like a leaf. I was so scared. I'm pretty sure I knew what he was going to say. But I just kind of tried to get him when he was still kind of, you know, foggy in the mind. No problem. Get on out of here. No, that's not the way he responded. But this was a soft and tender moment. There was no sensuality. There's no sexuality involved in this scene. She was only doing what was her right. She was doing it in a tender way. But she was putting it all on the line. Very tender moment. Rather than shun her, what did Boaz do? He showers her with praise. He asks the Lord to bless her for her boldness. He praises her for her kindness. He makes it very clear that she is going about this with the best of intentions. She's not out flirting with the boys. She's not out hungry for men. She's most likely a very attractive woman. She's very noticeable. She's very, people love her, think very highly of her. She probably could have gotten any one of the men in town. But she has come to Boaz, and Boaz lavishes her with praise. Man, I just want to say to you, this is a match made in heaven. She's looking like she's becoming the Proverbs 31 woman. He's every woman's dream guy. He's wealthy. He loves God with all of his heart. He's sensitive. He's caring. His workers call him noble. This is a beautiful setting that we're seeing in this book. And she could have looked for someone else, but no, she comes to Boaz. But would Boaz honor her? And I think he was already in love with her. I shared that last week. It just seems very evident from the way he goes to the furthest extremes to love on her. I just think he already has feelings of love for her. Isn't it great? Man, isn't it great when things start humming along really well? Isn't it great when things turn and all of a sudden life begins to take on sunshine and life and joy, and all of a sudden you're feeling like you're on top of the world? But another setback comes. Look at verse 12 through 18. Although that it is true, Ruth, that I am the nearest of kin, there's a kinsman redeemer nearer than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem, good, let him redeem. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until the morning. And so she laid at his feet until the morning, but she got up before anyone could be recognized. And he said, don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. It seems to tell us that wasn't the woman's place. He also said, bring me the shawl that you're wearing and hold it out. And when she did it, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and he put it on her, and then he went back to town. And when Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, how did it go, my daughter? Can you imagine Naomi waiting at the door? Naomi, tell me about it. What happened? I can't wait. I've been praying all night. I haven't slept through the... Tell me. She told her everything Boaz had done for her. And she added, he gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. And then Naomi said, wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today. Wow, Naomi has this amazing now sense of power and strength in her heart. Remember, only a couple chapters earlier, it ends with her being bitter, wondering, God, are you there? God, have you come forward? God, have you turned your back on me? God, what am I guilty of? Whatever it is, God, I'm bitter, I'm struggling. Now she's a woman of courage, resolve. Ruth and Naomi entrusted themselves to Boaz to be a godly man, to be a righteous man, and to do the right thing. You know, sometimes we just have to trust godly people that they will do the right thing that needs to get done. If you're encountering a setback in your life, if you are going through hard times in your life, if you've hit a roadblock, if there's something going on in your heart and you are struggling like mad to trust God because maybe you feel hurt, maybe you feel God has abandoned you, maybe you feel that life is not going in the direction you wanted it to go and you're beginning to inch towards blaming God for it, can I just say the remedy for that, one of the best remedies, is to seek out a godly, spirit-filled individual who you know is going to be a rock and is going to make a wise decision in life. You see, that's one of the greatest things we can do in our time of struggle is to turn to a godly individual. Tomorrow night, I'm going to have dinner with 2 men who are my rocks in the middle of my huge storm of life. I can't tell you about how these men, when I turned to them and sought them for their godliness and their character and their integrity and their love for God, I can't tell you how they lifted me up and I knew that I was in good hands. What Naomi is saying is, Ruth, we're in good hands. We're in good hands. This kinsman redeemer, he's going to do what is right to do. And I just want to say to you, this kinsman redeemer, Boaz, is our Christ image, Christ character in the Old Testament. He is a picture of Christ and what Jesus Christ has done for each of us. You see, this Boaz, he didn't have to place himself into that position. He could have said, no, I'm not interested. I have my own family. Instead, he stepped down and he welcomed her and he loved her. And he took her with her past and everything else. And he's saying, I'm going to take care of this. You see, that's what Jesus Christ did for you and for me. He took us out of our poverty and our struggle and our pain and our sin, and he lifted us up, and he took care of us, and he redeemed us. And what we're going to find next week, in the final message in this book of Ruth, is we're going to see a transaction take place. It gets really interesting, because you see, Boaz is not the nearest kinsman redeemer. There is someone else. And what we're going to see next week is that we're going to see the complete unfolding of the book of Ruth and how God is taking the broken pieces, the little pieces of her life, of Ruth's life and Naomi's life, and how God is taking the little pieces and he's putting together, he's weaving a beautiful mosaic. And we're going to see the completion of that mosaic next week. But I just want to say to you this morning sometimes it's easy to get stuck in the place that we're at, and we can't see the big picture of what God's doing around us. This past week, Sharon went with the kids from MES on a field trip down to Oregon University. And the kids went down to Oregon University, and one of the places they went to was the art museum at the university there. And this whole group of kids go into the art museum. You got to understand, this artwork is from people, artists from all around the world. Beautiful works of art covering the walls. Sharon's responsibility was for this little girl. Sharon just had to walk with this little girl everywhere she goes. But Sharon told me the other day, she says, you know what that little girl's greatest interest was in this beautiful art museum? The water faucet in the bathroom. The little girl was simply amazed that she could put her hands under the water faucet and water would come out. What was it?
Magic water.
The little girl, she's in an art museum surrounded by the beauty of creation. And she can only see the water faucet in the bathroom. You know, for some of us as Christians, we get that way. Sometimes we get tunnel vision and all we can see is the bathroom water faucet in the beautiful creation and the display of God's work going on in our life. And I've said it before in each of these messages, God has a love story in your story. God is working out a plan. God is working out a purpose. God is doing something in your life that is far greater, far more amazing and beautiful than you could ever imagine. Now, it may be on the other side of glory that you're going to be able to see it in its beauty. You see, Naomi and Ruth, they're not able to read these pages. But we can. Because we can. I hope that it encourages us to know that God is doing something great in each of our lives. If we trust Him, we give our lives to Him. I want to wrap this up by having a word of prayer. And join with me in prayer, would you, Father?